When are you going to take more money from us, man?
No offense, but I don't want to do that again.
From Foundation Capital, this is How to B2B a CEO, the show about how to scale your enterprise startup and how to grow from founder to CEO. I'm Ashok Garg, general partner at Foundation Capital. I'm here with Doug Knopper, who was the CEO of FreeWheel, a company that we had invested in the 2009 timeframe. Doug has been a CEO and a general manager for close to 20 years. He started his career at DoubleClick and was a general manager of a large part of that business. DoubleClick, for those who've forgotten what they did, was the original ad platform and was acquired by Google for $3 billion and change, I think.
3.1.
3.1 billion. Post-DoubleClick, Doug went on to become CEO of BitPass, which was in the payment space, was a challenging company and a lot of lessons learned there. And eventually in 2007 or so, he co-founded FreeWheel, which really reinvented the television industry. At FreeWheel, he was both the co-founder and co-CEO, which in itself, I'm sure, is a story.
For sure.
But Doug, why don't you tell us more about what you've done and what you're up to these days?
Thanks, Ashok. Glad to be here. So, as you said, my career has almost always been in advertising or in the marketing side of the world. At DoubleClick, I was general manager there for a long time, and we were the first ad platform that allowed people to make money from the internet through advertising. And DoubleClick grew to, you know, terrific heights, and they're now, you know, they were sold for $3 billion to Google, and they're now, you know, an essential major part of Google and powering a lot of what's happening within Google and the internet advertising ecosystem. In 2007, I met up with two of my co-founders, former colleagues from DoubleClick, and we started a company called FreeWheel. We saw an opportunity then in the video space. What the backdrop then was what was happening in the music world with kind of Apple and Steve Jobs taking all the value out of the music business, and the music companies were cratering as a result. And you know, you were starting to see wholesale TV shows going to all of these early platforms like Juiced and Vio and you know, YouTube and others, and the TV industry was saying, holy crap, are we going to lose the capability to monetize these shows like the music industry lost their content? And so with that as the opportunity, John and I, and then shortly after Diane came along, and we created a platform that allowed the big TV companies to take control of their content. So if you were showing what was popular then, Friends on NBC, and you had ads in it, you could make sure that you got credit for those ads and you made money off of those ads, whether that show appeared, whether Friends appeared on, you know, what is now Hulu and YouTube and iTunes and stuff like that. And turns out we did that pretty well. And
it worked out well. It worked out really well.
For sure.
And you know, as you may remember, I was sort of looking at the same space in the 2008 timeframe before I joined Foundation as a potential startup idea, and that's how we initially connected,
that's
and
right.
then the rest is history.
We just did it better.
Absolutely. You guys were so far ahead. I was like, I'm not going to try and compete with them. I'm going to go into venture.
Newsflash, we didn't have any idea what we were doing at that point.
So, as you know, and it was a great story. I mean, you guys were very early to a market that was just taking off. You were able to raise capital despite some tough times.
Yep.
Eventually ended up in a very high quality outcome in a sale to Comcast where everyone made money and everyone was very happy with the outcome. But tell us a little bit about what are some of the things, when you take a step back, you did really well at FreeWheel.
I think there were three things that we did right from the very beginning, kind of in structuring and growing the company. So the first was, from the very first day, we set a big vision. And this was me, John, and Diane in the early stages, and then our management team that we brought on. Setting, here's what we want to do. We want to help the television industry grow and thrive and prevent the decline that happened to the music industry. Not in those words, but that was always what our mission was. And that was inspirational and motivating and gave a cry of hope and help to the established players in the TV industry, to the newer players in the TV industry to see that there are ways to, you know, to make this industry grow. Remember, this was an $85 billion industry in the U.S., advertising, television advertising, and another probably $100 billion outside of the U.S. So this was not a small industry. So setting a very clear mission, which, you know, changed and adapted a little bit over time, but the general direction of that was always the same, was a motivating factor in how we ran the company and how we positioned ourselves to both the industry and competitors and others, and it always was essentially what Comcast today calls the North Star in setting kind of what we wanted to be.
Makes sense.
That was number one. I think number two was we, and this was not necessarily planned, but just worked out, we were, the three founders were established leaders. We had a deep network of people that we could reach into from our past lives. And that's not necessarily true from all Silicon
Valley. In fact, it's rarely true for most founders.
Right. No disrespect to them, but we weren't 22-year-old, just out of college founders. And so we had a deep well of people that we could tap into and a lot of credibility and good reputations with people. And we brought on 6 or 7 executives from DoubleClick mostly and some other companies. And they were amazing. That was the team that built this company, grew it to its peak, and all of them were there, all of them except one were there at the sale in 2014.
You had this very special situation where you had a network in the relevant industry, mm-hmm. and you were able to tap into the network to build your management team.
Yep.
For most founders who are doing this for the first time, who haven't been general managers, who don't have that network, what advice would you have for them, and how do they go about building an executive team?
Go find that network. Go to every conference. Go talk to every VC, even VCs that have turned you down. Everyone knows a great person that's looking for their next role. It's not that hard to build a network. I mean, we had a huge advantage, right? We knew people, we had worked with them, you knew their strengths, their weaknesses, and we were able to go to them and say, hey, we're putting a band together. Leave your current band and come join our band. And so that was something we could do. But there are a ton of people out there that are looking for new gigs, that are looking to establish themselves to a great company. And so, combining number one and number two, taking a strong vision that is motivating and encouraging and kind of has the opportunity to change the world, and then go find great people and go talk to every VC. I mean, you must know.
No, absolutely. I think it's a great idea. In fact, one of the things I've seen in founders that do this really well,
yep.
is they're thinking of what's the executive team they need a year ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're not
for sure.
hiring today necessarily for a VP of sales or a VP of marketing, but even a year ahead, they have a handful of people who could potentially fill that role.
That's right.
And they're actually learning from them. They are evangelizing their vision to those people. And so when the right time comes, you actually have a pipeline, effectively, of candidates.
You hire athletes and you hire great people, and maybe they're people that aren't necessarily qualified for the specific job you want, but they're great people and they're well qualified. And frankly, we had a great track record of hiring women and people of color, and having a female co-founder was, a huge effort.
Diane is, she's an incredible leader.
Indeed.
She really is.
And
yeah.
our engineering team that she built in Beijing has more female engineers on that team than any other engineering team at Comcast. So,
wow.
and that comes from having a strong
leadership. Yeah.
Strong leadership and a strong culture of we want to hire great people like that. And so, I think part of the problem that Silicon Valley companies get into is they go back to the same old boy network and only hire the same people. There's a million other people
out there that you have to tap into.
Might be a different sex or a different color than you, but go hire those people. They're great people that are out there.
You're responsible for all of the go-to-market functions, and
yep.
so one of the hard things for a technical founder is knowing who to hire as VP of sales.
Yep.
One of the founders I know said, hey, the biggest problem with hiring VPs of sales is even the bad VPs of sales are great at selling themselves.
That's right.
How would you go about that? What advice do you have?
Well, so again, this is where FreeWheel did something very unique. John and I were co-CEOs, and so what that allowed us to do was put people that were less experienced in as our next level of leadership, because I could effectively be the head of sales, the head of services, the head of finance in the early stages of the company. I didn't need to have a CFO, a head of sales, a head of services. So what we did specifically related to sales was we hired two at the beginning, great salespeople, Brent and Melissa.
Mm-hmm.
They were top-notch sales biz dev people that had worked for me at DoubleClick, and we brought them in as kind of senior salespeople. And over time, Melissa grew in to be our chief revenue officer, and Brent grew in to be our chief business development person.
Wow, so you started with individual contributors and you sort of grew them over time. Right. Which is harder to do for most other startups, because most founders aren't actually knowledgeable enough to manage sales VPs.
That's right. And again, unique to us being co-CEOs. Yeah. John was working on product and engineering with Diane, and by the way, they did the same thing. They were able to hire younger, less experienced people who grew in to be, you know, the head of engineering and the head of product over time, which allowed John and Diane to rise up. And over time, we had a chief revenue officer, we had a chief COO, a CFO, all that kind of stuff. But we didn't start out like that. And I do believe that was unique to us being senior executives.
Got it. That makes sense. So let's take the more typical startup situation. Mm-hmm. Most startups, in order to get their first 10, 15 customers, the CEO is the first sales rep.
And should be.
And should be. And
forever. For the end of time.
They're really getting the first 10, 15 customers. Now, the moment you have a dozen customers or so, and you're trying to get to your first million in real revenues.
That's right.
And the goal is, you know, you want to go to 0 to 1, and then you want to triple, double, double.
Yep.
So 1 to 3, 3 to 9.
Yep.
And it doesn't always work that way, but that's the goal. What would you recommend? At what point would you say bring in a professional VP of sales, and what profile would they look like?
I think it depends where the CEO has expertise. If the CEO is a technologist with a strong product background and is going to spend a large proportion of his or her time in product, then that person probably needs to compensate by hiring a stronger, talented sales professional. If it's the other way around, then they need to compensate by hiring a product person. So in the case, let's assume that the CEO is more of a technologist and is going to spend more of that person's time, personal time on product side. My recommendation would be, again, depends on how many customers you have. Is this a B2C model where you have hundreds of thousands of customers?
Think of a B2B company, let's say, which, you know, has a dozen customers, and their path to getting to $1 million is probably to get to close to 100.
I personally would say, in the very early days, in one of your very first hires, hire a strong, talented, but relatively young, maybe not filled with experience, salesperson, and train, groom that person, make that person your lead person on the street. That person can set up your meetings, set up your calls, get the first, do the door knocking, open the doors, bring you in to maybe close the sale or move it along, things like that. Ultimately, if you've done it right, that salesperson will then become a sales director or a VP sales, something like that, and maybe ultimately over time will be your chief revenue officer. I wouldn't go first, personally, let's go hire a really strong chief revenue officer. That person's going to be bored.
He's going to go build an army of people themselves.
And then costs get out of control and all
that.
Makes
a ton of sense. The other hire that's really hard for most founders is their first marketing hire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same debate, which is, do I go hire a content individual contributor, or do I go hire a demand gen person?
Yep.
Do I go hire a product marketing person? So, A, it's which functional expertise do I look for early on?
Yep.
And the second question is, how senior? Do I hire an IC, or do I directly go for the VP?
So I'm convinced,
what's your take?
After now 12 years of living in Silicon Valley and another 18 years prior in New York, that the hardest person to hire in a startup is the marketing expert.
I agree. I totally agree.
I think it is. There are the fewest qualified candidates that are out there. The great ones are amazing and do unbelievable things for companies, and you can't pry them out.
But you'd almost never find one.
Exactly right. So I'm convinced that is the hardest one, and there are more people that are needed in marketing. And I'm also convinced, too, because great marketers don't usually continue their career and retire as the head of marketing. They move to sales, they move to CEO, they move to services or COO or something like that. So marketing people tend to top out. I think that's the hardest one, and I think, again, the best ones seem to be the ones that you groomed. Go hire a person that's 2 years out of college, that's got a little bit of experience and is smart, a well-rounded, person that understands your industry or you can teach, and let that person grow into that role.
So your general thesis, I think, as a corollary to what you sort of did at FreeWheel, is hire people who are relatively early in their careers and help them grow.
For sure.
Because, A, it's hard to find the right senior person, and B, they're less of a doer and more of, they go build their own teams.
Correct.
Which an early stage company can rarely support.
But there's a corollary to that you as the CEO must be the developer and groomer and shaper and mentor to
of that
person.
Talent.
If you're not, then that person's going to flounder and fail. And I can tell you a million examples. I had a sales manager who would hire really young talent and then never spend any time with that person. And they failed. Shocker. No surprise that that person failed.
We'll be right back.
If Albert Einstein had worked in human resources instead of quantum physics, he would have said that hiring is hard. Not as hard as the general theory of relativity, but way harder than the special theory of relativity. I mean, come on. It would have been obvious to an HR professional as brilliant as Einstein that getting the best people is the difference between being a great company and a mediocre one. That's why Einstein would have loved Eightfold. Eightfold is the most effective way for companies to identify promising candidates, engage talent, reach diversity goals, and retain top performers. Businesses using Eightfold's talent intelligence platform have been able to achieve 7 times higher candidate responses, 80% faster hiring cycles, and 60% lower cost to hire. That's why Eightfold would have been Einstein's favorite talent management tool, and that's why it should be yours too. Eightfold improves hiring. Visit eightfold.ai to learn more.
You know, I know, Doug, you've been thinking about sort of the next step in your career and thinking about how can you sort of help the next generation of CEOs sort of grow and scale.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
So my premise now in this kind of post-Comcast, post 20 years of working for the man, I feel like there's a whole generation of new CEOs in Silicon Valley that are generally younger, less experienced at being a CEO. They have a great sort of product idea, a great vision, and they go to people like you and they raise, you know, $1 million, $2 million, $2 million, and they go off and build
it. These days, sometimes more.
Sometimes more. It's crazy how much money they're getting, kids these days. And they don't necessarily know how to run a board meeting, how to create a business plan, how to set goals, how to create a culture, all the things we've just talked about, how to hire people, how to retain people, things like that. And I feel like there are some lessons to be learned. I've been calling it cracking the code of what it takes to be a CEO, and in fact, sort of named my little company that I'm starting with CEO Hacker, which is cracking the code. And I think new CEOs can be taught how to develop and how to learn these skills that you don't learn in business school. You don't learn, no offense, from your VCs or from your board, yet they're critically important things to do. And so at this point, I'm spending my time with, I'm probably working with a couple dozen now CEOs, either formally or informally as an advisor. I just had a conversation with a CEO yesterday, actually one of your companies, about how do you set goals? You have different goals that need to be set. Your board might want to see one set of goals. You as a CEO and your executive team might want to see another, and your company might want to see another. Do you have 3 sets of goals and numbers? Do you present them? How do you know what
how do you align them?
How do you align them? What if you're meeting one and not meeting the other? And, you know, or the my personal one that I think a lot about is your team is working hard, you're crushing it, you've doubled revenue this year, but you told the board you're going to do 3 times. So the board thinks you're a failure, but you guys are crushing it.
Yeah.
And it's
a hard conundrum because you set something.
That's right.
And you're off by a decent margin.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, in absolute terms, you had a spectacular
year.
That's
right. So do you congratulate people? Do you fire people? Do you pay bonuses? Do you not pay bonuses? And working through that problem is not an easy one. And so what I'm doing now is helping CEOs kind of figure that out.
I think that's an interesting question. In fact, you know, one of the things I tell the CEOs I work with is, it's less important to me personally, at least, on how you're doing relative to goals, and more how you're doing in absolute terms.
That's right.
So, frankly, when you're setting goals, who the hell knows whether you can do 2.5x or 3x or 4x? I look at it and say the most important thing is, in absolute terms, you want to grow more than 2x. Because if you're not doubling, it's a hard place as a startup to sort of really inspire and motivate employees
for
and raise
sure,
the next
but
round.
Absolute rules can get you in trouble too, because there
That's
are some
too.
Companies,
yes.
FreeWheel didn't grow 2x for a number of years, and we were in the doghouse.
I know,
if you recall.
And I absolutely remember that, and you know, part of that was the market just wasn't
ready.
Right.
That's right.
And so that's the balance.
Yeah.
You have to find that balance. But I think the other thing is figuring out how to manage cash through those problems.
For sure.
So that you don't run out of, if you're burning cash,
totally,
like a company that's growing at 3x,
yeah,
and you're growing at 75%, now then you're in a real
that's
conundrum.
That's exactly right. So that's the CEO's job, is to make sure that sort of all those levers are being pulled at the right place. And by the way, as a side note on this, is one of the things that I feel is particularly important right now, particularly in this moment in Silicon Valley, is that women founders and people of color founders don't have these tools either. And so I think it's really important for us to be focused on helping people to grow.
Absolutely.
As CEOs. And so I personally am trying to help a lot of diverse CEOs to grow, because I think that's where the value for all of Silicon Valley can come.
I think that makes a ton of sense. And I think, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting journey, because you're onto something, I think, really big. There's, you know, so many people say, I'm going to go to business school. And business school is great if you want to learn to be an executive at a company.
For sure.
It actually doesn't teach you anything about being a founder
That's
or a
exactly
CEO.
Right.
And there really is no school framework
school
book
of
for
hard
that.
Knocks.
It's the school of hard knocks. And the question is, how can you, you know, you're not going to eliminate all the mistakes, but if you can sort of give people a heads up on, hey, here's a few things to avoid, the implications and success on cash.
Yes.
Which is the ultimate metric for a CEO is, I think, huge.
That's right.
Tell me a little bit why you're choosing to do this. Mm-hmm.
So as we've talked about through this whole session, I've been a CEO or a general manager now for 17 years. I don't think that I want to do that again. It seems like the most asked question for me is, are you going to start another company? What are you going to go, which company are you going to go take on next?
When are you going to take more money from us, man?
Yeah, that's right. No offense, but I don't want to do that again. I've done that now a number of times. And successfully, I've been very fortunate in my career. And I really feel like what I'm solving for now is to be challenged and not, you know, to be intellectually challenged and stimulated. And it's time in my life, this is the time in my career to help other people. And I think I have an expertise to be able to help CEOs grow. I've been through a lot and seen a lot. And I think if I can kind of pay that back and I could help 10 other CEOs have the success that I have, then I would feel great. I would feel like that has capped my career. And it's not to say that I'm not going to go, you know, maybe get involved in another company one day, or I suppose start my own or something like that. And obviously,
but we're still hoping you're going to start another one.
but I feel like if I could help 10 or 15 other companies be successful, that would be far more gratifying and powerful and exciting.
Makes sense. And are there particular, you know, types of companies or types of founders that you're more excited about than others?
So the founders that are interesting to me are ones that have a great vision for what they want their company to be. So they know what they want it to be, but they are struggling or challenged by how do they scale it up. That's number one. Number two, you know, I really believe that this is a moment in time where successful founders and CEOs and VCs have to look around us and say, who are the people that we can help to grow, and what can we be doing? And you know, if I can help other women founders and women CEOs sort of crack this code of what it takes to be a CEO and help them succeed, it would be personally very gratifying for me, and I think important to the Silicon Valley ecosystem.
So Doug, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, I've really enjoyed this.
That's it for this episode. You can find past episodes and subscribe to future ones on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. How to B2B a CEO is brought to you by Foundation Capital, an early stage venture capital firm with 27 IPOs, including Netflix, Lending Club, TubeMogul, and Sunrun. I'm Ashu Garg, a general partner at Foundation Capital. I'm passionate about helping B2B entrepreneurs who are trying to solve hard problems. So if this podcast speaks to you, if you are interested in growing from a technical founder into a business leader, drop me a line. Thanks, and see you next time.